Hey, we're going to continue the hour by talking about elections, social media, and misinformation. Election season is upon us. We're getting set to head to the polls if we haven't been there already. Prior to that, we're all searching for the information we need to make an informed decision at the ballot box. Amidst all of that information, though, we're also dealing with the widespread presence of misinformation, especially on social media, where that can circulate fast. To help us understand all this, we are joined by Shannon McGregor, who's an assistant professor at the Hussman School of Journalism and Media. Research focuses on social media in the realm of political communication. ShannonCMcGregor.com is her website. Dr. McGregor, thank you so much for being with us today. Good morning.
Thank you for having me.
So based on your research, and just to get us started with this, what do we know about how voters use social media and how that impacts their political activity, how they vote and how they just kind of interact with politics?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing to think about is first that most people don't use social media for politics at all. So the people who do tend to be those who are politically interested, who are people who tend to be a little bit more on the edges of partisan extremes, so more conservative, more liberal than the average voter. But that doesn't mean other people don't come across it, right? And so what we know is that this kind of information, especially for people who are not interested and don't know a lot about politics, can have a bigger impact because they're not as knowledgeable about it, right? So whatever they see can have a big impact on them. This can be good and it can be bad depending on what the information is.
So is it misinformation that's the problem, or is it like people who are just kind of on the edges of politics, like start to wade into this and they see extreme opinion over here, extreme opinion over there, and that shapes how people think?
I think that one of the problems that we have, and I guess I would use the term more often disinformation, because this is information that's false, that's spread on purpose. Misinformation is when it's sort of accidentally spread or misleading, but not really on purpose. Most of the election and political related false information that we see is disinformation. So it's created on purpose to try and change people's minds about certain things, persuade them to vote a certain way. And so we see this mostly being shared from, you know, political leaders, political operatives. And so as this comes across other people's timelines who are not as politically interested, it can shape what they think is important and it can shape their behavior on election day. But I think it's also important to point out that social media is just one place, right, that people get information about politics, about elections, and many other places have a much greater impact on many more people than do social media.
And social media is a relatively new thing, but disinformation is absolutely not. So how, like, what is the prevalence or what is the impact of disinformation today versus 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago?
Yeah, I think it's more visible to more people. Certainly since 2015, 2016, it has really captured the public imagination, this idea of disinformation. But there's been, for example, disinformation about voting and about elections in this country basically forever. We saw huge spikes of it after the Civil War when Black citizens, well, Black men, were franchised and were able to vote. Tons of disinformation about that to try and dissuade them from voting. Tropes like the welfare queen, this is a disinformation campaign. And so none of these things are necessarily new. It's just that they're more visible to more people and also have sort of captured the way we think about politics in the last, you know, 8 years or so.
Speaking with Shannon McGregor again, Hussman School of Journalism and Media. So with that in mind, I can go in two directions with this, and I'm not sure what the, I'll leave it up to you. Like, question number one that I have is, okay, so given that this isn't a new thing, how worried should we be about it now? And then given the fact that this isn't a new thing, how have people dealt with it in the past? How have we overcome it, if we have at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should be worried about it now, not necessarily maybe more than in other times, but one of the reasons that I think it's so worrying now is that we have people who were elected into office by voters spreading disinformation about voting, about elections, about the 2020 election, for example, that seek to take away the power of people to provide a check on them, right? So like really using the tools of democracy to undermine democracy. That's not necessarily brand new, but to see it at the scale that we're seeing at now, we have not seen, at least for quite some time. And so I think that's one of the things that's most worrisome to me.
So what can, we'll start with social media outlets. What can social media outlets do about this, or what should they do about it?
Yeah, so most social media platforms have content moderation policies about a lot of things, and one of the things that they have is content moderation policies about false or misleading election-related information. One of the problems is, like all their content moderation policies, it's very hard to do this well at the scale at which this is on, so there are mistakes. Another problem is that most of them are only doing this right in the run-up to the election rather than all the time. And I think that's a problem. And one of the other things that I'm not sure that they can do a whole lot about, or at least it's much more difficult to do something about, which is the supply of election-related disinformation. If they were to really take away all election disinformation, that would mean kicking lots of sitting Republican office holders or people running for office who espouse this sort of big lie about the 2020 election off of their platforms. That's a really hard thing for them to do, but that is something that technically does fall along with their own content moderation policies. So it's a difficult situation that they're in. They can't control the supply of it, but they can control the spread of it just in their own spaces.
What can traditional media outlets do, if anything? Like, I can be the gatekeeper, like we always used to do, and keep disinformation from getting onto this airway. But is there anything else that we can do here?
So I think that's the most important thing, and not necessarily all media outlets are doing that, right? But the other thing is to, I've been working with some of my colleagues at CTAP, which is the Center for Information Technology and Public Life at UNC, and other folks who do research in this area around the country to try and think about what would democracy-centered journalism look like. Mm-hmm. I think any journalist would say, of course, what I do is related to democracy. Like, we're the fourth estate. This is what we're doing. But
related versus focused, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So being focused on it means talking about things that we know make people feel more confident in elections and that are true. Free and fair elections have been carried on in this country for hundreds of years and are run well. Election workers are trained people. The sanctity of the ballot has in all recent memory been totally good. And so I think it's highlighting that it's just regular people who are trained to do this in their job, while at the same time not giving space or, amplifying anyone who would say false things about the election, this one or other ones.
Yeah. I think the other thing, too, is there are checks and balances in place if there is any unsavory activity, right? Like 2018, there was an issue in a U.S. House race in North Carolina. It was caught. They had to do a do-over election, but that's what happened. We've got a mechanism in place for that, right?
Yeah. So I think, stories that incorporate that rich history of the checks and balances that we have, of the peaceful transfers of powers that we've had, even when the election has been called into question, when I talk to my students, most of them obviously don't remember the 2000 election, but I'm from Florida. I was 17 and couldn't vote, but obviously I was very politically interested even then. The election was contested. It wasn't decided for a long time. Eventually, it was decided by the Supreme Court. There's still lots of controversy around that, whether that was the right thing to do. But Al Gore still accepted their decision, conceded the race, and facilitated a peaceful transfer of power. Mm-hmm. So even in big contested presidential elections, we do have a very recent history of candidates who are, pro-democracy, small d democracy, doing what is needed to keep our democracy intact.
Speaking with Shannon McGregor, and we got to start wrapping up, but as we do, slightly different topic. You also co-edited a book called Digital Discussions about how scholars and now political actors, too, can use big data to study how people interact with political messages and potentially target their messages to impact people more. What should we know about that? What is your research found?
I think the most important thing that just maybe listeners should know is that if you're not paying for something, then you are the product. And so all the actions that we take on social media and online more generally are being tracked. That's not necessarily all bad. It means that we get information that is relevant to us. So I think, there's a bit of a moral panic sometimes around micro-targeting. But just to remember that, political actors, like you said, people can buy this information, use this information to target you with information that you may very well be interested in, but also information that could be designed to suppress your vote, to feed you disinformation. And so I think it's just being sort of aware of how that data is used and how it's used to target you with information. And I tell people that if something that you see, especially on social media, but I think really anywhere, if it makes you either really angry or really happy, that's the time to try as hard as you can to just take a pause, because that doesn't necessarily mean it's false, but it has been designed to, you know, deeply engage you in that way.
That is super good advice. I like that. Speaking with Shannon McGregor, and we got to wrap up, what else should folks know that we haven't had a chance to mention?
Vote. This is the most important thing that we can do. Find information from trustworthy sources, nonpartisan sources, local news, like where I am now, is often a place where people still trust the media more than other places. Use your local news, get good information, and vote. This is the way that we keep our democracy working.
ShannonCMcGregor.com is her website for more information on Dr. McGregor's research. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.